better come on in my kitchen. There's hard to be raining outdoors.
Come over here, kid, will you, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of wood. You fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it to make sure it doesn't stick. You gotta do it well, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet. My country, 'tis of thee. I eat for social progress. I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry. Stay hungry. Stay hungry.
You want some more?
Delicious. Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the One Country's Most Delicious Hour. Beautiful day today, wasn't it? Everything just always looks so washed and pretty right after a rain. And, of course, lots of olive harvesting going on this weekend and last week, the week before, and the next few weeks here in Sonoma County and the rest of the North Bay. It is olive harvest time. There are lots of opportunities to taste the brand new oil. I had my first about a week ago. It is absolutely delicious. But we're not really talking about olive oil tonight. I hope that we will be doing that soon with several makers. But instead, I have here a wonderful writer, cookbook writer, and also friend. It's so great to see you in the studio, Marie Simmons.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
I guess the last time we saw each other was when you were over at, Copia.
Oh my goodness!
That might,
yes.
I think
was
that
it
might
that
be
long
when
ago.
The last
I think
time
it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did see you there, but I think the last time I was here in studio was probably for Fig Heaven.
Fig Heaven, yes.
Right.
Yes,
like
a book I just wrote something about 2 weeks ago.
Really?
Yeah, I took one of your recipes that was just perfect because I do a food and wine weekly pairing column,
mm-hmm.
and there was a wine that we can even probably find it online because Lawrence is so good at that. There was a wine I thought this wine wants figs. And I thought, aha, and I know where to find the perfect recipe for figs.
Oh, I love that book. Yeah. It was so much fun to work on and all that fig lore, and
mm-hmm.
It's just great. In fact, in this book that we're going to talk about today, I managed to get a couple of fig recipes in there. When I go back and look through my old books, I've always had fig recipes
mm-hmm.
in my books, and I didn't even realize I was such a fig maniac, but I...
Well,
there are a lot of us, I've learned.
You really do them justice. Well, this new book, and I want you to talk about the connection between the book, you and Sir La Table. It's called Things Cooks Love, Implements, Ingredients, Recipes. So was this one of those projects where Sir La Table was looking for someone?
It was. They decided they needed to have cookbooks, and I think that the idea for this book actually came about from the people who work in the stores, because if you've walked into a Sir La Table store, and there was the first one was in Seattle
mm-hmm.
in the 70s, and then now there may be, I don't know, 70 plus
mm-hmm.
across the country.
Yeah, we have one here in Sonoma County in Montgomery
right.
Village.
I've actually taught there.
I've taught there some too. It's a nice kitchen.
I love that, and the people there are so terrific. Well, if you walk in and if you're a cook, I mean, you just feel like you're in a toy store, like a child in a toy store. It's just incredible. And what would happen, I think, for the people who were working in the stores, their clients would come in, the customers would come in and say, well, what do you use this for? Why would I get this and not this? And, you know, looking at all the different cookware and implements and wondering what to do with them. And so over the years, it just became apparent that they needed They needed something to go to and say, well, let's look it up in here. So Sir Letab decided that they wanted to do a book. And then, of course, now they're doing other books. But this was the first one. They were new at book publishing. They got a fabulous publisher who has done a fabulous job.
Who is it that's doing
it? It's Andrews McMeel. They're in Kansas City.
Right. Yeah, I've heard quite a bit about them.
And they do, as you can see, you're holding the book. The production is terrific. Now, I had a relationship with Sir Letable because I had been teaching with him over the years. Mm-hmm. And they decided, because of the body of work, I do very general things, mm-hmm. basically, although I do very general or very specific, like figs. But anyway, I've done over 20 books. Mm-hmm. And they talked to me, and I had been at Copia and was ready, you know, to move on, mm-hmm. and missed books terribly. I loved being there, loved a lot of things about it, but I really missed my kind of cocoon of working at home and doing mm-hmm. and producing and creating for myself. So they talked to me about this book and just said, we want a book on cookware. What do you think? You know, and I was like, well, I'll walk into the store and I'll look around. And by spending time just hanging out in the store, making lists, going through all the catalogs, you know, all the that come out every mm-hmm. every month or so, I picked out all my favorite things. Maybe, but I, you know, 60 or 70. I'm not a huge gadget person. Mm-hmm. So I picked out 60 or 70 pieces of cookware, handheld, things that go in the oven, on the stove, global cookware. And that's how I divided the book. I wrote the proposal.
So you still had to write a proposal
for
them.
I had to write the proposal for them. They had an agent who had a very clear vision of what she thought this book should be. She worked closely with me on the marketing aspects of the proposal. Mm-hmm. It was a proposal like I've never had to write before. It was very interesting.
Really?
Very. Usually, you know, as you know, as a cookbook author, your proposals are very personal.
Mm-hmm.
I am passionate about this. Well, this is different because I have had to take the place of the Sir Letab shopper.
Right.
And I was, for mm-hmm. all intents and purposes. And I had to say, okay, why am I passionate about these things? Why would anyone care about these pieces of cookware? So it's everything from a simple saucepan, the different sizes and what you use saucepans for, and things like rim sheet pans and skillets and double boilers, to the global kitchen where, you know, we were just looking at the beautiful photograph of the tagine, the Moroccan mm-hmm. tagine. So it's for the very sophisticated cook and also for the beginner, but people who love food and love to be in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm. And yeah.
No matter what their expertise. So that's sort of the genesis of the book.
Uh-huh. And then, so I want to know a little bit more about how you ended up dividing it into, well, I mean, the first two, essential cookware and tools, that section, total sense. Cooking with kitchen essentials, total sense. But then you have this very interesting division of globe-trotting kitchen essentials, Asian, Mexican, French, Indian, Italian, Iberian, and Moroccan.
Well, that was driven by what Sir Letab has
what
in their
they carry.
Stores.
Okay.
Now, I have to tell you, this is a generic book. This is not a book of for a shopper. This doesn't have prices. It doesn't have brand names.
Mm-hmm.
It's all very generic, and it had to be because
You have to
those things change.
And, yeah, that would give it a very short life.
And we didn't, and also we didn't want it to be a catalog. We didn't want mm-hmm. it to be blatantly say a sales pitch. This is a book to use. And I must say, the Sir Letable name appears in the lower corner of the front cover, and it's mentioned in the acknowledgments and in parts at the beginning of the introduction. But this is a book for all people to use. And you can take this book and you can shop anywhere you'd mm-hmm. like. But of course, you know, of course, Sir Letable would love that you go there, and why not? Because mm-hmm. it's great fun, and it's if you happen to live near one, and of course their internet sales are, you know, off the wall because people love to do that kind of shopping as well these days. But anyway, so it's not about that so much. It's mm-hmm. it's about, but all of the things that are available in the stores are things that are available in many other places as well, and that you will find in the global kitchen is, you know, very popular cuisines. Mexican, mm-hmm. Asian, and in the Mexican kitchen we have the tortilla press and the earthenware baking dishes, the mm-hmm. cazuela and cazuela. Did I say it right?
Yeah, I think you did.
Okay, it sounded. I guess it's the the headphones. Yeah, it makes things sound funny. And then right to the tagine, which is very exotic. Mm-hmm. And the French mandolin, the cocotte, which is kind of a casserole, mm-hmm. that's used in the French kitchen, and so on and so forth. The bamboo steamer. And I had such a ball in my kitchen with all these pieces of cookware and coming up with recipes that, you know, were classic but yet had an interesting little twist, mm-hmm. Are easy for people to find ingredients for, and, you know, all of those other things that cookbook authors have to think about.
Right, yeah. So let's just take an example of one. Let's say the Mexican kitchen, and we're going to turn to that section. Class, it's on page 171, if you have the book there with you. I think Mexican cooking is, certainly in California, is one of the most popular cuisines. Would you agree?
Oh, definitely. And not
say after Italian.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think, especially in California, I would say Italian and Mexican. Mm-hmm. Sort of, Italian's kind of, you know, always out there. And but definitely Mexican. And I think also in other parts of the U.S., we're seeing more and more. And not only, it's just Latino, the Latin influence. But the Mexican kitchen was a lot of fun. And I discovered the other thing about writing a book like this is that although we are the experts, you know, you in your field and I'm supposedly an expert in my field, we hang on to that because we're just learning every day.
Yeah, you're anticipating my next question. How much of this, say, let's take Mexican, how much of the implements and the authentic tools were familiar to you? How much learning did you do as you wrote this?
Well, one of the things I did a lot of it was hang out at my neighborhood bodega. Mm-hmm. I live in Richmond, and so I was in a great place, and right up on San Pablo Avenue, there was this great, you know, bodega, and I was, you know, it's 5 minutes from my house, and I was there constantly, asking questions, buying ingredients, taking them home, trying them, and just having a wonderful time, and then, of course, you know, I have a huge library, and I'm sure you mm-hmm. probably do too, looking at what the experts have done. And mm-hmm. we use expert experience in the opening of each piece of cookware. We have quotes from cookbook authors. And I think, you know, for here's one from Rick Bayless, who's an expert in, you know, in mm-hmm. Mexican cooking, has restaurants in Chicago. And so that was taken from his. So they're quotes taken from books.
And here we have Diana Kennedy, of course.
Can't
write about Mexican cooking without Diana.
Right, and she has a wonderful quote. I have a wonderful quote I found where she's talking about how terracotta cookware is has wonderful flavor, you know, just sort of gives food nuance and flavor mm-hmm. that you can't really put your finger on. It's not scientifically proven, mm-hmm. but she doesn't need the science. She has, you know, she mm-hmm. knows.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that is so important to either discover or learn about is it's not just the tool to make the thing functional, but those tools translate onto the palate.
Yes, and I think part of it is soul. You know, uh-huh. you know, the soul of the cook, and you kind of, and if you don't have the soul, you can learn to appreciate that those nuances. Mm-hmm. So we start each section of the Global Kitchen with a pantry, making so users of the book can become familiar with ingredients. Mm-hmm. And in that, I was sharing, you know, the differences in the Mexican cheeses. You know, I didn't know all the different mm-hmm. cheeses. Then I discovered that my local supermarket had an enormous section of Mexican cheeses. Mm-hmm. Now, they were all packaged. They were commercially mm-hmm. made, and they mm-hmm. were under, I can't remember the brand now. But, you know, they had, I mean, they must have had maybe 8 different cheeses, mm-hmm. including the wonderful sour cream and, you mm-hmm. know, the crema.
The crema.
And
crema, queso, yeah, quejilla. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, so many.
So many. It was so just, many. You know, and they were basically cow's milk cheeses that mm-hmm. were all aged differently. Mm-hmm. And were used, some were real soft, some were for grating, some were for crumbling. And so that, you know, I share that because I use those different cheeses mm-hmm. and you know, some of the spices and so on. So I do that for each Global Kitchen.
And I see here you have one of my favorite ingredients, achiote and achiote paste.
So and that was fun because I had never really cooked with those.
Oh, yeah. I discovered that.
So
down
I discovered
in,
them.
Yeah, down in Baja. Gosh, it must be 1985 or 84, 85. I was staying with a friend who had a little house And that's when he said, here, taste this. And it's like, I've been buying Achiote ever since. I just love it.
I love it with citrus. It was kind of, I did a recipe in there with flavoring fish, seafood, I think, with citrus.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it was a book of discovery. I worked on it a year and a half, and a lot of research, And as you know, to write 10 words, you research, you know, two hours.
Yep.
Food's the best in the town. Cause I can cook too. My fish can't be beat. My sugar's the sweetest around. I'm a man's ideal of a perfect meal, right down to the demi-tasse. I'm a pot of joy for a hungry boy, baby. I'm cooking with gas, so I'm a gumdrop, a sweet lollipop, a brook trout right out of the brook. And what more, baby, I can cook.
And you can cook, too. This book, Things Cooks Love, will help you. Marie Simmons is the guest here on Mouthful. Thanks for tuning in. On to another cuisine, I guess. Well, actually, no, let's talk about the mojarrete. I can't live without a mojarrete.
Well, that was an adventure for me because I actually, you know, it's funny. This was a good segue into mortar and pestle, too, because I was in an interview I had. Somebody said to me, interviewer said to me, what was your favorite implement, you know, piece of cookware from working on this book? And I said, actually, you know, it's something I've always loved using, but I had never had a really big one, and that's a mortar and pestle. And because I was able to get a really big granite one for this, mm-hmm. for this project, I started using it for everything, and I love it. I will never part from it. It was so interesting because here it is actually one of the oldest mm-hmm. utensils ever. And the mojarrete, of course, is related to it. The adventure I had with the mojarrete is you have to make sure it's seasoned properly.
Yes, they have to be seasoned.
And some of them are really difficult to get. Either you buy it seasoned or you work on it. But I worked and pounded rice in mine for days and days and days.
Oh, tell us.
And it didn't work.
Tell us more. What is it that you're trying to achieve?
What you're trying to do is it should stop giving up dust.
Okay.
And the one I had just wasn't doing that.
Oh.
And it has all to do with how it's been cured, and I'm not clear exactly what that term involves, in the factory where they're made. But it's an artisanal product, mm-hmm. and they're handmade, and they're made from lava rock, mm-hmm. and they're heavy as all get out.
Oh, God,
very
they're
beautiful. So if you happen to buy one that you make a little pesto in it, and it's a little crunchy, yours isn't cured properly. And you can cure it with... just, you know, putting kernels of rice in it and pounding the rice, and the rice will turn all gray, and then you rinse that out and dry it well, and then you add more rice, and you just keep pounding it, until the rice will pound clear.
Clean,
white. And But sometimes, you know, it just is impossible. Now, I did finally get a mojarrete that was cured well, but it caused a bit of an uproar, you know, in terms of who the supplier was, and they had to go back and figure out what the problem was. So it was really interesting. So that was an adventure.
Yeah, that really is. Now, have you ever used a suribachi?
Well, for this project, it's in the book.
It is in the book.
It's in the book.
I think that would be the one piece I could not. As much as I love my mojarrete, I love my suribachi even more.
It is, and it's a whole other little rhythm of movement. I had a lot of fun. I live very close. I'm so lucky where I reside. I live close to Tokyo Fish on
the
fish market, the Japanese market on San Pablo Avenue, and I guess it's Berkeley. And so I was hanging out there, too.
We should say suribachi, of course, is... The Japanese version.
Right. It's ceramic.
Yes.
It's ceramic.
Scored.
It's scored inside, and it's with a wooden pestle. Mm-hmm. And it's a little slightly different movement. I think you can grind in it, but it's also, I can't remember now, it's slightly, do you find it's a slightly different movement, or do you use it exactly as you use your mortar and pestle?
No, and I think with anything like a mortar and pestle, a mojarrete, it's so... physical that I don't even know if I could tell you
exactly
what I do until I have it in my hand.
Right.
Because you really just become one with that implement. Mm-hmm. And as you're holding the pestle in your hand, and as you're moving it against whatever you're moving, you just intuitively make little adjustments.
Yeah, that's true. And because I was reading about how to use it, and then I went to the store because I had never used one. And they, you know, I said, well, show me how to do this. And then one of the things I read about, these are very beautiful. They come in different sizes, mm-hmm. and they're very beautiful. And they're they're used to grind in the simplest, maybe sesame seeds
and seaweed.
Ginger, seaweed. Elizabeth Ando, who is an expert on Japanese cooking and has written several books on the subject, I wrote to her. I did a lot of that. Sending mm-hmm. emails, great. You know, the internet is fabulous. So I would email experts that I knew in the field and told them what I was doing and you know, ask for their opinion or their guidance. And one of the things she talked about was actually making a soup in it and then eating right out of it,
mm-hmm.
which is quite wonderful.
Yeah,
because
I now make my pesto in it.
Mm-hmm.
I make aioli in it.
So you can use that,
and then I take it to the table.
And that's the other thing. For each of these pieces of cookware, that's a good point, because I give a little explanation of the cookware, and then below it I say other uses and how to care for it. And then one of the last categories are, well, alternatives, because my feeling was this, you know, we don't want this to be a catalog. If people do not have a molcajete, but they want to make these wonderful recipes, mm-hmm. well, what else can they use? So, of course, in the case of a molcajete, you could use your mortar and pestle, or in the case of a suribachi, you could use your mortar and pestle, or, you know, if you needed to be plugged in, you could use a food processor. You get a slightly different result, but it would begin to accomplish mm-hmm. part of what you wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. And one thing I have always loved about the mechanical ones, suribachis, molcajetes, all of them, if their power goes out, you can still make something.
That's right. That's right. And sometimes you just don't want that noise of that motor. But, you know, I guess the theory is that the heat, you know, a motor produces
mm-hmm.
heat. And the
Absolutely.
Heat, of course, it's very subtle, but it does affect the flavors.
Mm-hmm.
And
Absolutely.
You know,
and plus, for example, garlic, I always think, is a great example. And I like to have students who are doing hands-on grind garlic in a mortar and pestle, grind it in a molcajete, grind it in a suribachi, and see the difference. And then grind it also in a food processor.
Mm-hmm.
I now do it always in a suribachi. It's almost impossible to get a real puree, a real paste, in a food processor. You don't get that. You get little teeny, teeny, tiny chunks, but it never goes that final degree.
You
so
don't get,
I love
it's,
the texture.
Well, I think it also gets it's juicier. You're mm-hmm. it gives up more of its natural juices. Another thing I'll do very often in a mortar and pestle, if I'm either ginger or garlic, I'll add a pinch of coarse salt.
Oh yes. Yes.
And that really helps to bring out the juices and give it a little more texture. And once that's melted in, it's luscious.
Mm. Now I'm getting hungry.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the recipes you get in. Before we leave the Mexican section, let's just go through some of these. Oven-braised duck legs with toasted pumpkin seed sauce. Mango and chipotle chili guacamole. Oh, my.
That is quite... You know, I was just reading that recipe, and I thought, why haven't I made that? Why didn't I make that this summer? That is so fun and really pretty. Very pretty. If you have a great molcajete, you could actually serve it right in that.
Yes.
They make beautiful
serving
pieces.
They absolutely do.
Yeah.
Now, if you stovetop pepper roaster, let's talk about that. What is the difference between a stovetop pepper roaster and just, say, a stovetop grill?
Well, this actually, it sits above. It sits right on, and so the flame actually comes in contact.
Uh-huh.
So you're not just searing it, you're actually charring it.
And so, but at the same time, you're not having to fish them out when you just set it on the burner like I do.
Right, right. Or, you know, in a way, that is a substitute for, we're so spoiled here in California, we can use our outside grills almost all the time.
Right.
But if you, you know, if you live where, you know, in Maine or if you're mm-hmm. in, you know, Minnesota in the winter and you want to, you know, grill your peppers, you can do it right on your stove. It's a very inexpensive, easy little, it's kind of a fun, but I thought it was really interesting. So that's why I chose
mm-hmm.
it.
You also have rajas, poblano chili strips. I have a big batch in my refrigerator.
And I discovered that that stovetop roaster could be used for quesadillas.
For grilling fruit. Oh, for quesadillas.
Quesadillas.
Oh, what a great idea.
Yeah, instead of, you could use it that way.
Uh-huh.
And I like, so I
actually probably get really good results using it that way. You get a little bit more toastiness.
Right, right. Yeah, so I think the fire, you know, touching the grain.
That's a great idea.
So that worked out.
And then,
well,
of course, the terracotta bakeware.
I just, that picture, it makes me so hungry.
it's roasted fish with achiote potatoes, chili strips, and orange salsa. It just looks like fall. It's so many beautiful shades of burnt orange, gold, and luscious. Finally, we must talk about the tortilla press. What's the secret?
Perseverance is the secret. I had I never got my tortillas quite as thin, although they get better as you go along.
Mm-hmm.
But the fun part for me was I had all these tortillas that I had made varying stages of success, and I was having a great time. Then I thought, well, what am I going to do with these things? So then I made this wonderful sopa seca. I took the tortillas and I made a casserole, which is Mexico's answer to, in a way, lasagna.
Uh-huh.
You just layer the strips of, you cook the tortillas, and then you, well, they're cooked anyway. I mean, you're cooking them on a little griddle. And then you layer them with a tomato sauce and cheese,
mm-hmm.
and you bake them. And it was really,
talk about
comfort food.
Yeah, really.
It's great.
So when it comes to handmade tortillas, it's just perseverance.
It's feel. Mm-hmm. It reminded me when I was making them, I grew up in an Italian family where I always helped my grandmother make pasta,
mm-hmm.
and I always saw her working dough. And she would say to me that I would say, Nana, how do you know when it's ready? And she'd say, oh, I can feel it. Mm-hmm. I can feel it. And I was looking for that when I was working with the tortilla dough. Mm-hmm. I was looking for that feel. And it takes, I think you have to just keep practicing. And it's fun. You know, it's just, you know, cornmeal and water. It's not as if you're throwing out, you know, truffle salt or something. So, you know, and so you just keep working with it. And then if they're not perfect to have, you know, to serve and tender to serve with a meal, you know, make a casserole. That's what I did with my first ones.
Mm-hmm. And that's a great idea.
Yeah. I was so glad when I discovered that recipe.
Oh, yes. And there's a photograph of it.
Yeah. It looks very oozy and good.
Okay, let's take another musical break. We'll be right back here on Mouthful. It's Mouthful. It is KRCB. I'm Michelle Jordan. Thanks for joining us. I never remember to tell you that, you know, you can send me questions about anything we've talked about here on the show or anything else at catsmilk@sonic.net. That's catsmilk. And Kainoa, we found the article, right? And it's Novi Syrah. So if you're interested in the, it's bacon wrapped, wine poached, dried figs. And you just go to pressdemocrat.com. And I think if you just put in.
Search
Mouthful plus figs. And my name, you would probably get there as well with. probably if you just search Novi, Novy Syrah. Plus figs, that would probably take you there as well. If you can't find it, just send me an email. I'll make sure you get it. Really is a really good recipe. Now, you'll only have four appliances that plug in the book, right?
Yeah, I'm not really a plugged-in kind of cook. I remember when I first got my food processor, my husband bought it because he thought I really should have it. It was, you know, the Cuisinart, which was the first one, you know, and it sat on my counter for months. I danced around it before I actually plugged it in and used it. So that is where I'm coming from when it comes to plugged-in things. Of course, you know, but my feeling was...
I'm not much for... I'd have to tell you, I agree with you. I don't even... I've never had a microwave.
Yeah, things that, you know...
I have an ancient food processor that I haul out once every, I don't know...
For certain things, you know.
I haven't figured out how to make really good hummus without a food processor.
No, I agree. Well, I guess if you wanted to get your mortar and pestle and really get into it, you could.
I have not done that yet.
But
maybe
I think
that's a project for this winter.
Yeah, that might be, yeah. But anyway, the other feeling I had, my instinct told me that major appliances have their own books.
Yes, I agree.
And yeah. It's been said. Everything's been said. People know what to do. So we only have a few. We have the immersion blender, which I think is a fairly new piece of equipment.
Yeah, people still aren't quite sure what it is, and it's so very useful.
Well, once you use it, you'll just, I mean, you know, when we make soups, and I like a blender for soups. I love a blender for mm-hmm. soups. So, but then you have to ladle into the blender, and then you have to pour it back, you know, and it's all of these extra steps. With the immersion blender, you just puree that thing right in the pot, you know, and you have this
yes.
wonderful. And if you want to have some solids, you know, you just ladle out.
Or I find you can just go in a little circle in one area, mm-hmm. and on the other side, those solids stay over there.
That's true. You know, yeah. there's always, you can several ways you can figure out how to do it. So I have an immersion blender. I have a spice grinder, which I thought would fit into the Indian, my mm-hmm. Indian, global yeah. Indian chapter, because it's very typically you grind your own spices for Indian food, and that's where that fit in. And I did use the raclette, which was really kind of fun, because unless you have a, you know, a campfire and a hot stone, it's a little hard to make, to melt raclette, which is the cheese, mm-hmm. And it's a wonderful dish.
Yeah, I want to find that.
You serve it on boiled potatoes. I think it's in the French section.
Yeah,
French section. And then the final thing is the rice cooker.
Yes, and would you go into detail about rice cookers?
Well, you know, rice. I did two books on rice. I wrote one before. In the 90s, and then I came out with one that was published in 91, and then one that was published, I think, in 2000. And 10 years, a decade is a big difference in rice. And I've used a rice cooker from time to time. I don't use it religiously, but people who love it, like my daughter, who's lived in Asia and was very... you know, it just is part of her life to, you know, put the rice on in the morning and you eat the rice. It's there for you. And so a rice cooker is pretty amazing, and it's become very sophisticated. It has all kinds of bells and whistles now. The more, I have the very basic one. It has a little steaming basket in the top. They now, for a long time, they were always... nonstick coated, and now there is a rice cooker out, which I was not available when I was working on this book, that has a stainless steel insert, which is really very cool.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a good thing. And but they're all different sizes, and you're guaranteed, you know, foolproof rice. I mean, it just, you really should use, one of the things that you should do is you should use a little measuring implement, because you need, because it's such a moist interior and mm-hmm. the heat is low and even, you should use the little measuring cup, because the ratio of rice to water is a little different. And I find it works best for white rice. But you certainly can use it for brown rice. Mm-hmm. You just have to remember to add extra water and to give it more time. Mm-hmm. But it always, it'll tell you when it's done. There's no guessing. You know, it's, you know, you hear the bell go off and the machine turns itself to low, and it keeps the rice very, very, you know, warm on very low heat. And you have rice always there. So it's a great thing.
How is it with some of the more unusual rices, the red rice, the forbidden rice?
It works very well with the Bhutanese red and forbidden rice are two rices from Lotus Foods down in neighbors of ours in El Cerrito, and it works very well with those. You just have to fool around with the water ratio.
Water ratio, yeah.
And if you actually buy their rices, they always give directions and amounts. But at home, in all honesty, when I cook rice, I just get out my favorite pot and cook it.
Yeah, that's what I've always
done.
That's
my habit. That's the way I do it. But if you're interested in a rice cooker and if you eat a lot of rice, it's a great little appliance because they don't take a lot of room. They're pretty small.
That's one thing that's appealing is it's a way to have one less thing on your stove if you're doing a lot of cooking.
Right.
And plus, because I spend so much time with either people who love Hawaii or Hawaiians, and any time I've learned one thing. Anytime there's a party, it's a potluck. You don't get to say it's not a potluck with Hawaiians.
Right.
And somebody always shows up with rice and rice cooker. It's like, okay, I need to pay attention to this.
Yeah, yeah. And then you can, one of the recipes that I have in the book for a rice cooker is I do something called green rice with tomatoes and coconut. And what I do is I cook the rice, it's jasmine rice, and I cook it in the rice cooker. And then I actually puree cilantro with coconut milk.
Oh, that would be so.
And then
two of my favorite things in the
world. Yeah, and I pour it over the jasmine rice in the rice cooker that's already been cooked and stir it in. And it's just
oh, that sounds wonderful.
Yummy. It's really nice. And it has all those wonderful flavors. It's real pretty. And then I think what I ended up doing was garnishing it with chopped tomatoes and coconut. And it's just a wonderful side dish.
It sounds really simple. Excellent. Okay, here's the raclette grill. And you have classic cheese and potato raclette recipe. And you know what, Lawrence? I'm going to sneeze. Tell us about the raclette grill.
Well, the raclette actually is the name of a cheese, and it's also the name of a dish of melted cheese that's always served with boiled potatoes. And it has a wonderful history. It dates back hundreds of years. And alpine shepherds would spend days in the mountains, and they would have potatoes with them, and they would have their hunk of cheese, and they would have a fire with hot rocks, and they would melt the cheese on the rocks and eat it with their potatoes. And so actually the word is French, and it comes from the root word to scrape. Scraping the cheese off the rocks. And onto the hot potatoes. What could be better, melted cheese and hot potatoes?
Not much. It makes me think back to the Mexican kitchen and that dish, queso fundido. Kind of hard to resist. That's one of those, you were talking about figs and not wanting people who come to dinner to eat too many figs because they won't want anything else. If I serve queso fundido to guests, I finally realized the rest of the dinner is going to be a bust.
I think melted cheese is the best snack in the world. When we were growing up as kids, we would get off the school bus ravenous. You know, we'd run down the street. Grew up in a rural area. Run down the road. We didn't have streets. Run down the road, nor sidewalks, into the kitchen. And my mother was a school teacher, so sometimes we'd get home before she got home. Mm-hmm. And we never had, you know, I'm always appalled at families that have a drawer in their kitchen full of bagged snacks.
Oh.
You know, I'll never forget the first time I saw that in somebody's kitchen. I was like, what is that?
I don't know if I've ever actually seen it.
Yeah, well, I was just amazed. But because our snack was always that we would always have loaves of Italian bread. Every day the Italian bread was picked up at the bakery. And so we'd slice off the Italian bread. My sister would turn on the broiler, and we put slices of mozzarella cheese on the bread, and we'd melt it under the broiler. And that's what we always had, melted cheese on bread. That was our after-school snack. And so
it's still one of mine.
Yeah. I mean, whenever I'm cold or I need a little comfort, it's always melted cheese. You know, it was the Italian version of a grilled cheese sandwich. But anyway, what was the question?
I just wanted you to talk about the raclette grill because it looked like I was going off into a little fit of sneezing.
Oh, okay. So anyway, but it takes a lot of space. It's large. And
it
has handles on two handles, and it's a grill. And what you do is, what you, and it has all these little, it's so difficult to explain, has these little trays that go, that slide in underneath. And so it's a great thing to do with a company of, you mm-hmm. know, say you have eight people, because I think there are eight little trays that come with it. And so what you do is on the top of the grill, you prepare all these different foods. You can have potatoes that have been boiled, and then you keep them warm, and they get kind of brown on top on the grill part. Well, actually, it's a griddle. It's not a grill. Okay. It's a griddle. It's a flat surface. And there you could also have some shrimp or some, let's see, I think I had some roasted peppers, any different, all different things. And then on the side you have a cheese. And then what each person does on their little tray, they make their own little raclette.
Oh, okay.
Which could just simply be slices of cheese mm-hmm. that they are, you know, they slide underneath and they it melts, and then you, that's what you eat from along with your potato. Or, you know, you can put some shrimp on there and put the cheese over that, or, you know, you can use different cheeses. I think I even did a version with fig and blue cheese. Let's see, did that make it? Yes.
Yes.
Fresh fruit with walnuts and Roquefort. So I used Roquefort cheese. And I did bell peppers with Comté cheese. I used different kinds of cheese. And shrimp, tomatoes, basil with brie. So I made it very versatile. I had a ball with it. It was really fun. And I got, you know, this is a piece of equipment I barely knew existed. I knew what raclette was, but I didn't know about this utensil, this piece of cookware. So it was really fun. And I've since, my daughter has borrowed it, and she's had friends over. Mm-hmm. And you plug it in, and you sit around the table, and you just kind of, you know, it's kind of like the fondue party.
Yeah, that's what, yeah,
it is. It's kind of like the Swiss version, of, or the Alpine version, since I think this is in the French section.
It is.
So it's that bordering region, the Alps of France and Switzerland.
So time flies when you are around Marie.
When you're talking about food.
Yes. So let's talk about the Iberian kitchen some.
Well, that happened because there were one of my favorite and fascinating pieces of equipment that I had known about, and I had made the dishes, was a cataplana, which is the Portuguese. So, and it was
I love the cataplana.
Yeah,
I just love it.
And it was, what page is that on?
That is on page 296.
Oh, good, okay. So the cataplana is this sort of clamshell shaped utensil. It's very often hammered copper with a tin lining. It also can be aluminum. I think Portuguese people use them. According to my colleague, Jean Anderson, who wrote the definitive book on Portuguese cooking many years ago, it is used. They have all different size ones. Most, you know, Portuguese cooks at home have all different size. Some of them are just hammered aluminum, and they cook chickens, they cook pork roast, they cook, you know, everything in them. And so, but it's the typical dish is a cataplana made with clams and pork.
That is one of my favorite dishes in the world.
I love
do
that
so many variations of that.
And but then I also went a little further and experimented and did baby back ribs with cannellini beans, which was a lot of fun.
Wouldn't take that out of bed either.
No. Right. I know, that's a good thing. So that's, and then the other, I did the cazuela, which it's a very versatile, very inexpensive earthenware, and they come in every size imaginable and used throughout Spain. And let's see, what else is in that
And, of course,
section?
There is the paella pan,
which was great. And I did a whole series of classes based on this book at Sur La Table stores across the country where they still have cooking schools. And I always did that paella, and it was very, very popular. And a lot of people don't really understand the important steps to making paella and making it successfully.
Talk a little bit about that.
Well, first of all, you don't want to cover it. You want to cook, your rice is cooked uncovered, which is very alien to us. And you don't stir it, which is alien to us, although I've been fighting very hard for years to get cooks not to stir their rice. Yeah, it's the worst thing you can do.
And then it's the best thing you can do if you're making risotto.
Of course.
And now that we've gotten friendly with risotto, it's hard to break that habit.
Well, you stir it when you're making risotto because you want it to be saucy, but typically you don't want rice to be saucy. You want the grains
right,
to be
distinct
individual.
Grains.
So what we learn about with the paella is we also learn that their Spanish rices are slightly different. They have a lot of the properties of a risotto rice. Mm-hmm. They're a slightly sticky rice with a little bit of a core. But they also have the ability to absorb enormous amounts of broth or liquid.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another thing. The other thing is the addition of the saffron to make the rice yellow.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I've learned is that, and I can't remember now. I have to look at my recipe, and I haven't looked at it in the last couple of days because I just learned this the other day. I was at this Mediterranean conference with a lot of chefs from the Mediterranean region. And one of the chefs talked about the infusion of saffron and broth, adding that to the rice before cooking the rice in that little infusion
mm-hmm.
before you add the rest of the liquid. Because that's one way to really get that saffron flavor
and
into the
set.
Rice
uh-huh.
and have it set. So that's a really good hint. And the other thing is to give it time. And you cook it on, you don't cook it in the oven. You cook it on top of your stove, or the best thing possible for those of us here in California, cook it on your
outside,
grill.
That's yeah.
It is perfect on the grill. Absolutely perfect. And you tuck them, if you're doing shellfish, for instance, clams or mussels, you tuck them down into the rice at the end, hinge side down into the heat. So,
mm-hmm.
so
the hinge,
that's where it cooks.
That's where it's open.
And
yeah.
then also when they open, they're very pretty. You mm-hmm. have all these sort of blossoms of open seafood, you know, mm-hmm. shellfish sitting in your. And the other thing is that it doesn't have to be complicated. It doesn't mm-hmm. have to have everything but the kitchen sink in it, or everything
I
in the
I think it's
kitchen.
Better when it doesn't have
it's
everything.
The simpler, the better.
Yeah.
The simpler, the better. Just concentrate on, I mean, this particular one has shrimp and
chorizo.
And chorizo and chicken.
I
think in threes.
Mm-hmm.
I always think in flavors of, I like to think in threes. Anything beyond three is excess. Because you want, because otherwise the flavors are too muddied.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know,
I agree.
It's too complicated. And then I did one with mussels and lima beans. Very simple shellfish and lima bean. And that is I use smoked paprika for. Smoked paprika, the sweet paprika.
The really, the good.
Pimentón
dulce.
Dulce. Is just, you know, the best. And I have become, you know, sort of married to that. As a result.
I brought some back when I was in Spain, I think, I don't know, 3 years ago maybe. Oh, it's
so good. I put
it
on potatoes. I put it on vegetables. I use it on everything. I don't just use it in paella.
Oh, no, I use it in all kinds of things.
It's really, really, it gives such a wonderful, haunting flavor. And so that's the Iberian kitchen.
And then we only have a few minutes left, and so I'm not really saving the best till last, but now we come to Morocco.
Mm.
And Moroccan cuisine is just, I find, absolutely magical. I love it.
I agree.
And what would it be without preserved lemons?
It would be bland.
Yes. So let's
Although if it could possibly ever be that. But that little saltiness... It's just so... I just love preserved lemons in salad.
I do, too. I love preserved lemons.
Period.
Yes.
They're just...
And that's
and
my
so simple.
My favorite tagine. And a tagine, you know, this makes it very clear. A tagine is both a thing and a dish.
That's right. As paella.
Right.
No, it's the same.
I'm going to treat myself to a tagine. I've been teaching a Moroccan class for about 5 years now. I just look at these tagines with lust. I want one.
And it's kind of interesting. This one that is pictured is, it's not the typical terracotta,
it's not the glazed
terracotta.
Uh-huh.
It is made from, it's made from red clay. And it is very light and very durable.
Oh,
it's a new material, very high-fired red clay. They also make Dutch ovens, and it's a beautiful piece of equipment, and it comes in these very pretty, I think it comes in red or black. But it's an excellent, I want to do more research on that piece, that material. But and you can use it on the flame safely or in the oven.
Mm-hmm. Great. And you have, let's see, you have chicken tagine with prunes and tomatoes, lamb tagine with artichoke hearts, dried apricots, and preserved lemon. And then you do have a recipe for preserved lemons.
I do.
It looks very, almost identical to mine.
Yeah, I think they're all, it's like lemons and salt. That's about it.
Every now and then I find people who add sugar, which I don't go along with
I've
at all.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, I've seen that a couple of times.
I wonder why. Well, it's just, you know, cooks like to add their own touch.
Yes. Yes.
You know, or I've seen some in jars with little cumin seeds. And
yeah, and when I was writing salt and pepper, I did make some with whole black peppercorns.
Oh, that would be very good.
It was pretty too in the jar. It's pretty, but it was good.
It would add an extra dimension of flavor.
But in the end, you know, you can add peppercorns later. You don't have to put them in.
You can just put some grind some pepper, nice coarsely ground pepper.
Well, Marie, this is a fabulous book. Do you have any idea now what's next for you? Something
no,
you can say?
No, I don't have any idea. I'm trying. I'm looking. I'm ready for a project. Anybody out there know of one? I'd like to do it. I keep cooking. Yes. And I just want to keep cooking. I love cooking. I cook for a living, and I'm so fortunate. I cook for fun.
Yeah.
Aren't we lucky?
Aren't we lucky? Are you doing any classes in the next couple months?
I'm not. There are not as many places to teach anymore.
I know.
And I love teaching at Ramekins, and I did have a class that I wanted to take to teach there. But there, you know, it didn't fill up, and so we didn't do it.
Yeah.
And I think that's been happening a lot. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a quiet time now. I think people are kind of hunkering down.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully they're hunkering down in their kitchens and cooking. And
we can hope.
Making themselves happy with some very good food. It doesn't have to be elaborate. It just has to be cooked with love. It could be scrambled eggs and...
Oh, I had scrambled. I had the most delicious scrambled eggs for dinner the other night.
Perfect dinner.
Perfect dinner, especially when you get just the best eggs you can get from your favorite vendor at the farmer's market and have lots of really good... Because I scrambled eggs and butter. And every now and then I will put in some pimentón dulce, actually.
Oh, that is... Oh, yeah, with eggs.
Yeah, and
that's
I did... Sometimes I do... The American version of scrambled eggs, but lately I've been doing the French version where they're scrambled so slowly.
Yeah, they're like it's like a sauce. So.
Yeah, and it's like you're eating this little
creamy
flavored cloud. Almost.
I know, perfect.
So we can just go on for a long time in our mutual love here. Well, again, it's a wonderful book. Fig Heaven. Do you have a website?
I do. It's mariesimmons.com. It's easy.
Yeah, well, very good.
www.mariesimmons.com.
Great, and I know we can get you to come back, right?
Sure, why not? I love chatting with you, and we don't get to do it often enough.
Well, we'll have to change that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And thanks to you, too, for tuning in for my chat with Marie Simmons. Again, that book, and I've seen it all over Sonoma County, at Sur La Table and at other places. Things Cooks Love, Implements, Ingredients, Recipes by Marie Simmons. It's a great Christmas present, great holiday present for anyone you know who loves to cook. So meet me back here next week for another yummy episode of Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. Have a great week and continue to celebrate all of the good things that happened this week.
Mouthful on KRCB comes from KRCB radio members and from the Sebastopol Farmers Market, now open in the downtown Sebastopol Plaza every Sunday from 10 to 1:30 with organic, sustainable, locally produced fruits, vegetables, meats, and cheeses, plus breakfast, lunch, and local musicians. Support also comes from Peter Lowell's Cafe in Sebastopol, offering breakfast, lunch, and dinner in the rustic Italian tradition, featuring seasonally sourced organic produce. Serving brunch Saturday and Sunday, Peter Lowell's Cafe online at peterlowells.com. Support also comes from NetBooks, complete business management software for companies up to 50 people, including wineries and food producers. Information available at netbooks.com or by phone at 86-NETBOOKS.
Now listen to what the preacher says. To the Lord that praises me. It's time for dinner, now let's go eat. We got some beans and some flip cornbread. Now listen to what the preacher says. To the Lord that praises me. It's time for dinner, now let's go.
Mouthful is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to mouthful@michelleannajordan.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast from krcb.org or from iTunes.
Time for dinner, now let's go eat.